Hello everyone, welcome to the Cyber Weekly. The Cyber Weekly is a podcast which talks about cybersecurity. With me, the Gracious Okello, and Josephine Love, my co-host. Today we are welcoming Ellison. But before we continue, as usual, Josephine, do you have anything to say?
Thank you, Deo. Just to say welcome, Ellison. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, a quick rundown of Ellison's profile. He's currently at EY as a manager. Ellison has been working as a manager in IT risk consulting at EY since March of 2024 this year. His role involves leading IT risk consulting engagements, providing strategic advisory services, and developing IT risk assessment methodologies tailored to clients' needs. He's also director at ISACA. So since 2021, Ellison has served as the director and head of audit committee at ISACA Kampala chapter, where he oversees audit procedures, recommends changes to accounting and audit processes, and ensures the chapter's finance records are reviewed annually. In terms of volunteering, Ellison has been volunteering as a social media advocate, and she leads Tech Ambassador with ISACA International since 2021. Then his previous roles, Ellison has held various positions in IT advisory, in IT audit and advisory, including roles at Terrain Cyber Solutions, Grand Thornton, Uganda, and other organizations where he focused on IT audits, risk management, compliance, and team leadership. So when it comes to skills, he possesses a strong skill set in areas such as Sarbanes-Oxley Act, project management, anti-money laundering, cybersecurity, IT risk management, compliance, governance, leadership, and digital marketing. So that is Ellison. Ellison, how are you doing this morning?
Fine, thank you, Dale Gracious. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast. I'm a huge fan. I don't know if you get many fans joining it. So for me, I'm a tad starstruck being able to interact with you, because you're now celebrities in our space.
Yeah. The biggest celebrity is Josephine, of course.
It's very kind of you to say that, but I wouldn't agree with you being a celebrity. If I was a celebrity, I guess I'd be mobbed on the streets. but yeah, thank you very much for being a follower, and we highly appreciate it, and we are very grateful for you to be on this podcast today.
So let's dive into the questions. Ellison, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
As you rightly put, I've been in the IT risk and consulting space for close to 8 years now. Prior to that, I was all over the place, as we used to be back in the day. We didn't have a lot of guidance to help shape us in terms of career paths. So I worked in IT support, I did a bit of customer care, I did social media, I did digital marketing. So I'm very diverse in those realms. I'm married, one woman, and God blessed us with a child recently who is such a blessing and such a darling. In future, when you're like at 1,000th episode, maybe she'll be here and you'll be interviewing her. Hopefully she takes onto the cyberspace, but usually children have minds of their own. In addition to that, I do a lot of work around mentorship to the young professionals in the field. I realized I faced so many challenges, and if I can offer any guidance, I'm all up for it. I'm a huge fan of sports. I used to play rugby at entire school, and I also support Manchester United. I hope there are some Manchester United fans out there. I know we're struggling right now, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. In a nutshell, that's me. Yeah, and I'm a fun-loving person. I like interacting with different people and whatnot. So for me, this opportunity to be on the podcast on the Cyber Weekly was a dream come true.
Yeah, thank you. We won't discuss football, that which means we will not discuss football. But thank you for that. And definitely, I think you've done the hustles, but I think some of those skills that you picked up must have been very good for you. I like the digital marketing thing, so that's a good one. But then you ended up, of course, in IT audit. Why and how did you get into IT audit and obviously working with cybersecurity?
So earlier on, when I was looking at what to do at university, I wanted to do something tech leaning. So I did computer engineering, and whilst there, I realized all the fields at some point are going to evolve and have to evolve. I knew automation was something big on the rise. So I figured that the only space where we shall be relevant and we shall always be needed with cybersecurity, because it doesn't matter how much you automate, it doesn't matter how much AI comes into play and all the like, you still need professionals to make sure that those systems and those things are secure. So doing that, and I've also always been passionate about the law. So I figured cybersecurity would help me leverage my passion for the law and be able to do IT, which is something that I love. I didn't like IT support. I felt it was very repetitive. It wasn't that challenging on my side, because you'd have to sit and wait for a problem to come in. And at that time, I think Dale was still in primary school. The landscape, we weren't much appreciated as IT support personnel, so I entered something where I thought people would be appreciative of what we do. So cybersecurity was very high on my agenda. So when an opportunity came to join my former workplace at Grant Thornton in IT audit, I felt, okay, this will help me go into that line of cybersecurity, which I'm passionate about. So I actually took a pay cut at that time, because I was at Vodafone at that time and I was doing quite well. So I decided to make that move so that I can then embark on my career. And it's something that I don't regret up to now, because I feel this space is ever evolving, it's always challenging, and it's something that will always be in demand.
Okay. So that transition. So since you're now at EY, which is one of the top four audit firms in the world, with presumably high-end corporate clients, can you walk us through an IT auditing engagement with a client? And what are some of the challenges you face, and what do you enjoy most about your role?
First and foremost, one of the biggest challenges we face is the fact that in terms of processes, people are, in Uganda especially, people are reactionary, and that includes top management and boards. It's something that they're now getting acquainted with, but when I was just starting out, it was such a big hassle. Most clients that we were dealing with would be clients who are going to audit their financials, and they're using systems. So an IT audit professional had to come into play, and they wouldn't even understand why we are looking at IT audit, yet we're auditing financials. So convincing them that this is actually something you need was the biggest challenge, still is a challenge. So now that at EY, as you said, rightfully said, most of the clients are bigger, they are more exposed to IT risk and are able to understand it. In terms of how we go about the engagements, usually we will draft a plan where we allocate people, then we'll do a risk assessment, identify the key areas that we need to look at, mostly in terms of financial, what affects the financials. If we're doing a statutory audit for, let's say, banks or payment service providers, then we already have a scope defined by the regulator, which we're supposed to follow. Usually we'll look at the IT general controls first. Those are the controls that surround the environment in which the systems are hosted. So things to do with change management, how they onboard users, how they review them, and multiple controls around that space before then we delve into the automated controls within the system that help mitigate risks in that area. Yeah, but in addition to that, we also do a lot of consulting work. So clients will come in and ask us to help them either set up policies and procedures or identify where they need to enhance their control framework, or we'll come in and help them do risk assessment so that they can better manage their risks. We also do a lot of trainings where we train the board or end users on the technical part of it. So then in the compliance space, we do a lot of work around data privacy. So there's an endless limit to what you can offer, which is why for me this field is quite interesting, because every engagement is going to be unique. Every client is going to be unique. It's not a one size fits all that I'll have one template and then run with it with all the different clients. For every client, you're going to have to understand their landscape, what regulations affect them, what systems they're using, and how to help them better, be more efficient. Which when at the end of the day, when you see them implementing these changes that you're recommending and the controls that you're recommending, it feels nice when you see them especially doing well and they're appreciating that. So that is what gives you the satisfaction at the end of the day.
Thank you for that. I guess you're dealing with mostly large clients. You deal with SMEs as well?
Yes, definitely. We deal with all sorts of clients. There's when I joined EY, I found that there was that misconception that we only get big ticket size companies. Not true at all. We do a lot of work around SMEs because in this space, in the consulting space, it's always better to grow with a customer, with a client. So when you find them already established, then breaking into their space becomes difficult. You find that they have things that they're doing and changing becomes difficult. But if you can get them when they're still growing and help them grow, then that adds more value and it's much more appreciated, because that will be a lifelong client for the company. So it's we do deal with a lot of SMEs.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah, definitely has been a misconception, but that's good to know. So we have cybersecurity threats. We know they're always changing. And how does your firm stay ahead? Because obviously you said you're consulting and advising clients. Does your firm stay ahead in implementing and advising clients on security measures and controls? And also, what role do you see emerging technology playing in the future of IT auditing?
So we leverage a lot because we're a global entity. It helps quite a bit because we leverage a lot from experts that we have across the globe. So we have industry specific experts who then come in and tell and keep us up to date on what the trends are, what are the threats that are emerging, and then we see how they apply to our local landscape here. So we leverage a lot on that. It helps quite a bit that we are global. In addition to that, we utilize very many other organizations like ISACA, like FITSPAL, because they also players in the industry. in the sector, and they help us identify local specific and also international specific emerging threats. So we try and keep tabs with everyone, with all the key players and stakeholders, because that's how you keep ahead. And it's something that I always also point out to my mentees, that in this space, if you think you studied this year and you're going to wait and utilize that knowledge, within 6 months, it's usually obsolete and you're playing catch up. So you always have to keep on top of your toes, finding out what's happening, attend CPEs, attend different webinars and discussions, so that you keep up to date with the trends. Emerging technology is something that's really, really up on the rise. So we're seeing that the risk landscape is reducing, it's increasing, and it's becoming more and more sophisticated. And it's unfortunate that here in Uganda, we see that very many companies and even regulators are very reactionary, because they wait for things to hit the fan before they then start acting. But we do engage the stakeholders to try and see and create awareness, so that they know that, look, this is something that you need to keep, you need to be on top of. So AI is something we see that there's a lot of deep fake fraud happening nowadays. So some of the controls that we used to use back in the day, like sending, just simply getting approvals via mail or instructions via mail, are something that we look down upon nowadays, because you're not quite sure who sent that mail. So additional controls have to be brought into play. And in terms of some of the IT processes, some of the IT audit processes have to be automated, because some of them are repetitive. So we know that in the near future, AI will have to leverage artificial intelligence and machine learning to perform some of those tests, especially those that deal with data analytics. When you're looking at large transactions and looking at large sets of data, you might want, as an entity might want, to leverage artificial intelligence to be able to do that data analytics for you, because there's a lot of human error that comes into play. And also in terms of controls and being implemented, it's always better to automate them, so to avoid any human intervention, because our system, once you configure it to do something, you're going to trust that it's going to do it. Whereas with a human being, it's more of you're trusting the human being, and human beings have a mind of their own. So we find that machines will usually do, if they don't go the Terminator route for the movie fans out there, if they don't end up doing that to you, you're fairly certain that it's going to do exactly what you tell it to do.
Thank you. I don't think Deo knows the Terminator route. Not having been born when the films came out, Deo, you need to Google
you
it.
People are making me feel very young. Anyways, from your experience, what are the most common cybersecurity weaknesses you see in organizations across different industries, especially in SMEs? What are the most critical cybersecurity controls or best practices that organizations should prioritize?
So the most basic and most fundamental challenge that we've seen currently is, or that I've seen personally, is the government side of it all. We find that many organizations don't have proper structures in terms of dealing with cybersecurity, and that's all the way from the board level to senior management. They don't have that. Usually that is left to the IT administrator to figure that out. And it's something that we are doing our best to create awareness on, whether it's with EY or with ISACA. Governance is the biggest weakness, because it has to start from the top before anything can be implemented locally. The ownership has to go out from the IT administrator, because most of the times the IT administrators are also trying to reduce their workload. So they would rather wait for issues to arise and then act on them. So once that is sorted, that means you'll be able to create policies, there'll be oversight, there'll be proper budgeting. So the biggest weakness is getting the buy-in from the at board level, making the business case for it, and explaining to them that, look, I understand, because most of them will be like, we're a small company, we don't think we're going to be hacked. And you're like, okay, and then you have to explain to them that, look, the risk is not just you being hacked. That's a very, very tiny bit. You have to look at business continuity. What happens if your systems go down? How is that going to affect your bottom line? Because you will find clients where a system goes down and they don't have backup procedures and they don't have anything in place, and some of the information has to be input manually to try and catch up. And that time that they spend and the amount of resources that they spend is usually very, very big, and a lot of errors happen during that process. So the digitalization of it all and explaining to the boards that this is something that they need to do, they need to concentrate on, because most of them think cybersecurity means you're looking at only the hacking bit, which is a misconception that we're trying to get people aware of. That it's not just that, it's how you automate your processes to make them more efficient. Because when you automate, that means you're spending less time. So you're concentrating on more strategic things and you're concentrating on customer satisfaction and all that. So for me, the biggest control that everyone needs to start with, needs to implement, is have the governance laid out, have accountability, have oversight, and have policies and procedures in place, because then you start building onto that. You're able to identify key areas that you need to work on, key. You're able to know that, okay, now I'm supposed to do a risk assessment and then I evaluate. But without governance, if it's still left to the IT support personnel, then there's still a lot of work to do. When personally, when I was an IT support person, I felt I was doing everything. I felt like I was on point. But when I came into this space of IT risk, that's when I realized that there was a lot more that I needed to do. And I don't know if the curriculum has changed, but back in the day when we were still studying, these are things that we weren't taught about. We're taught about malware, viruses, worms, and that's it. We weren't taught about proper procedures and proper industry standard specific cybersecurity frameworks that we can implement, which I think is something that needs to change, if it hasn't changed, that needs to be incorporated, so that at least on a bare minimum, any IT professional should be knowing how they're supposed to be doing things in a proper way, where to get information from, because some of the times the curriculums take a long time before they are updated. So it's something that I feel we need to strive with from the very start, from the get-go. So that by the time someone gets into the field to execute, by the time someone becomes a systems admin or an IT support professional, they know that on a bare minimum, this is what I need to be doing. And then from there, they can always enhance their knowledge.
Yeah, thank you for that. I guess there are a couple of things I've taken away from your answer there. It's culture and tone at the top are important, and governance, but also our education systems. I think we've noted as well that when people come out of university, they're often don't not really ready for work, and there are many gaps. But perhaps that is where institutions like Isaka really play a big role by augmenting the skills, some of the basic skills that they come with from university. So that's an important aspect that we play. But I think, you know, having and being an advocate for better education is a good, it's something that we all should become, that we
True.
university students need to come out with much more life or relevant skills. Yeah, so thank you for that answer. You are a leader in your organization, and you know, you come across as very laid back and all that, but what kind of leader are you? And also, how do you manage conflict? I know the auditing area is quite stressful, long hours. So it'd be interesting to know how your experience has been.
So the type of leader I aspire to be, I don't think I'm there yet. It's a work in progress, and I believe in continuous improvement. Is a leader who empowers the team. My approach is usually, let me teach you everything that I know. That way you're able to execute to the best of your ability. I find that also eases my work when it comes to how much input I'm going to have to put at the end of the day. So I spend a lot of time training and empowering my team members to be able to execute the levels that I expect them at. That way, I'm also challenged to also keep improving and adding value, because they'll reach a point and say, look, we are not as good as you. That means there's no purpose of you anymore. So I don't say a tad laid back. I'm someone who likes to work hard, play hard. So when it's time for work, it will be a serious face. When it's time to play, I'll play with them and make sure that they have comfort. I like engaging my teammates on a personal basis because I realize very many times the reasons why teams don't perform is they have other issues. They're human beings at the end of the day. So I'd want them to feel free enough to talk to me about those, and then we see how we can advise accordingly. Because I know once they have that peace of mind, they'll be able to deliver as I expect it to be. In terms of the working hours, I haven't seen that yet. But it's always good to go above and beyond, especially when you're just starting out. It's something I tell my mentees and my teammates, that when you put in those hours, at the end of the day, they help you become better, they help you become more efficient. It's all about being efficient, I believe. So once you do something the first time, it's going to take a very long time because you're figuring it out, you're learning. The next time you're going to realize you're going to spend a shorter time, and before you know it, you're doing things in a jiffy because you're now becoming an expert in it. So those 10,000 hours that make you an expert in a field have to come from somewhere. So if it means working a bit longer sometimes, it's always good because you're building up to those 10,000 hours is what I believe. So that's the leader I aspire to be, someone who is personable and someone who empowers the team members to be able to execute, because I always believe that is what a manager is supposed to be doing. You're supposed to empower the team to be able to execute, so that even when you are reviewing, it will make it so much simpler because the quality of work will be on point. So initially, it's something I used to struggle with. If I'm reviewing and I find there are errors or there are things that need improvement, I'd rather fix them myself because I felt that would save time. But then I realized on the second engagement, those would be the same errors. On the third engagement, those would be the same errors. So I started the approach of let's review. The first time we're going to review together, I'm going to sit down with you and I help you identify the thought process, what you need to be putting down. And then subsequently, you will see that the quality of work keeps improving. And that also builds confidence with the team because they're able to go to the clients and be able to properly articulate themselves even when you're not there. So that's the type of leader I aspire to be.
And thank you for that. And how do you manage conflict?
Conflict is, I believe, first of all, is unavoidable. So it's because I have this personable approach to my team members, it's also easy for me to sit down with them and try and be a mediator if the conflict is among two people or it is with a client, understand both sides, where everyone is coming from, and try to help them see that. So I always have the approach of try and listen as much as possible so that you put yourself in the other person's shoes so that you can see where they're coming from. It's very rare that you find someone is going to be bringing something up without a basis. And if you're stuck on your side saying this is my point of view, then that point of view might be narrow-minded. So it's always better to try and envision and put yourself in the other person's shoes, envision where they're coming from, why they'll be doing or saying something in that regard, so that then it's easier you get an understanding, and it's easier for you to then interact with the person and help them see your side of you in conflict. And it's a skill I picked up during customer care when I was doing customer care for the conflict, or it's usually a misunderstanding. So the first step is to always understand, and people feel appreciate it a lot when they feel that you've listened to them, you've understood their point. Then they'll be able to calm down and listen to you, because they know you put in the effort to actually listen to them and try and comprehend what it is that they're coming from. So the approach is the same way you handle irate customers in customer care: is listen, try and reiterate to them the challenge that you think they are facing. And once you're in agreement at that point, they know, okay, now whatever solution he's giving me, he has listened to my side, and it's something that applies. But if you approach it from a point of view of, I already know what this is, and you haven't bothered to show them that you've understood their side, then they'll just feel unheard. And even if they agree with you, you won't have solved the problem.
That's a
great approach.
Though, I hope you're taking notes.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. So now, as a board member in the Isaka Kampala chapter, you have roles as an head of the audit and audit committee to take care of the financials and the audit issue. How do you balance that role and ensure that cyber security risk and strategy are given adequate attention and priority at the board level?
So it helps a lot that ISAC as an institution is predominantly a cybersecurity institution. So majority of the people on the board are cybersecurity professionals. So that for me hasn't been a challenge. All of them are well versed in what needs to be done. So in terms of getting board buy-in, it's very, very easy, because they all know what it is. They all know what it entails and how important it is. Then we have a secretariat that handles the operational work. So those are the ones that, but once they get a board instruction, then they are on top of it. The team has been growing. When we started off our tenure, the team was quite small, and there's a bit of restructuring that happened here and there to get that bigger and to be able to improve. So it is a work in progress, and I believe there's quite an improvement from when I joined to what it is now. So in terms of balancing that, it's been quite seamless, because the board members are all cyber tech professionals and they understand it, and the team then has to get the buy-in. They need to understand the vision of where we're coming from. So yeah, that for me has not been challenging at all. The workload is not that constraining, because I come in periodically when we're doing the annual audit. So I and my committee helped select the external auditor, review what they're doing, track the progress, and make sure that things are being implemented as per the recommendations. So that has been quite seamless. Maybe for people who sit on other boards, Josephine sits on quite a number of boards, that her point of view might be different, because now for her, she'll be dealing with people who are more on what's the bottom line, I'd assume. What's the bottom line? Are we making profits and whatnot? So then when you bring in the cost aspect of cybersecurity, then that becomes a challenge. At least that's what I see when we're doing board trainings, that some of them you really have to point out where the pain is when it comes to the money. When you put things monetary wise and explain to them that, look, if you are down for this amount of time, for example, if your system goes down, or if you get a ransomware attack and your data is encrypted and you're not working for this amount of time, this is how much you're losing. If you get attacked and there's a leak of data, personal data, the reputational damage sometimes cannot even be recouped. You might even find yourself closing down. So putting the fear of God in them in terms of what could go wrong is the approach that I usually take with boards, to try and show them that we understand that you're looking at the bottom line, but you need to invest in this space, because this, you could even end up shutting down. If PDPO, for example, starts issuing fines, they come out saying because of a data privacy breach or something like that, this is the amount of money you're losing, and your customers are going to now stop, are going to reduce their trust in you, so you're going to lose a bit of clientele, then the boards will start listening to you. Yeah. But with the SACA, that hasn't been a challenge at all.
Yeah, thank you. You can imagine whose question that was. That was my question. I wanted to understand from you. you know, when you come on the board and you have a specialist skill, so your background IT auditing and you're dealing with the financials, you tend to get pigeonholed into that role. So I was asked. I wanted to know if if you see your role as going beyond just the financial person, but also on the board, being able to look at the strategy of SACA and also the strategy to adopt with cybersecurity risk. But that is the challenge that I have, that you kind of get pigeonholed into roles, and even in your role as an IT person, getting that agenda, like cybersecurity agenda, and looking at it from a strategic standpoint can be a challenge. That is why I asked that question, whether you have that, you know, that is hard, that whether the balance is there between the discussions on the financials, the cyber risk strategy. But I think, as you said, you have a board that is very well aware of cybersecurity. So that's very refreshing to hear. Yeah, it's a, in my roles, it's a work, very much a work in progress. So yeah, so that's what it is. I think we're looking at your role as a mentor now. I think you said you really have enjoyed mentoring. You've mentored on She Leads Tech. I see you've also working with other organizations and mentoring their young people, their professionals. What strategies do you recommend for developing cybersecurity professionals, and then how do you, when you're talking to your mentees, how do you ask them to implement some of these strategies?
So maybe a brief background, if I didn't hint on it earlier, the reason why I love mentoring is because it's something that I lacked coming up in the space, and all through my professional journey. First thing I tell them is I feel like I wasted 4 years doing computer engineering. I should have done a shorter course and concentrated on certifications, because when I got into the field, I realized the things that I had learned in school, majority of them were not applicable in the work environment. Things had moved on, and what we had studied was very, very, very high level. And there's a lot more that was required. I had to learn a lot on the job. I had to figure a lot of things out. And that's why I went into IT support, did customer care. So those were 5 years of my professional career, either way, that I sacrificed. So I feel that had I had a mentor, maybe I would have gotten into the space quicker. I'd have known exactly what to do, what to study at uni, how to prioritize what I'm learning and what to get into. So that's why I'm very passionate about mentorship, because it's something that I found lacking, and I feel I would have benefited a lot from a mentor at that time. So usually the one thing I try and bring out to them is they need to, in this day and age, you need to do something you're passionate about. Most of them I find they are more money-minded. They look at what's my paycheck going to be like and whatnot, and I explain to them and say, look, if you went to a proper international university to study these things, how much would you be spending? But if you come onto the job and you're learning and you're being paid whatever it is you're being paid, then imagine that you're learning. You're not paying school fees, but you're being paid as well. So use the time to learn. Identify what you're passionate about, because in this space, in the IT space, you need to continuously keep learning. And if you're not passionate about something, then that is going to get, you're going to get fatigued real quick, because things keep changing, and they keep changing at a very fast pace, and the onus has to be from you. Most of the times, your organization might not be showing you the direction of, okay, go learn this, go learn that. So the onus has to be on you to keep relevant and keep learning new things so that you can then improve your organization. It's the ideas need to come from you. It's why they hire you, and it's how they find value from you. If the ideas are not coming from you, then that means you're easily replaceable, because then anyone can do what it is that they tell them to do. So if you're not passionate about it, then you're going to get tired real quick, and you're going to get frustrated because you're not being paid as much as you think you ought to be paid. And yet the company is also not seeing the value that you're providing. So the strategy areas tell them is go work, volunteer if you have to, work for free. I personally volunteered at the Directorate of ICT Services in Makerere University for the last 2 years of my study while there. And that helped a lot for me to be able to identify what I felt I didn't want to do. And at that point, I decided coding is not for me. Networking is not something I'm really passionate about. Databases, I'm like, no. So that helped me a lot to identify and be like, okay, so these areas I'm not interested in. Let me, where is it that I'm passionate about? What will keep me challenged on a day-to-day basis so that I can wake up in the morning and say, I'm glad that I'm going to work. That is that once you have that mindset, then you're not going to look at the money. And that means you're going to learn way more. And that means you're at the end of the day, because this paycheck will come. You just have to prove your worth. And you're not going to prove your worth when you don't know anything. So majority of them, when I tell them that, they take a step back most of them appreciate it and say, okay, we get it, because we were looking for jobs and we were asking for so much money because we thought we were going to do ABCD. But when you put the perspective of how much would you be paying as tuition in an institution to be able to learn these things, and now you're learning them free of charge on the job while being paid a bit. So having that strategy is way, way better. And I keep telling them, look at all the job adverts that you're going to see. They're going to say, we want someone with so much experience. You're fresh out of university, so there's no job that wants you without any experience. So what then are you going to do? How about you volunteer if you have to? Find organization, find SMEs that don't have anything in place and advise them. You're building your CV, you're getting experience, which will then be able to set you up for that bigger job that you're envisioning to have. So yeah, I really like chatting up with them, because now I even get to see, I see myself in them, and I always tell them, you're lucky that you're entering the space when it's a bit more advanced. For us, when we joined, telling someone that, look, I need to have a backup server, a test server, so that everything comes on the test server before it goes into production was an issue, because they were just looking at the cost of it all. Now people are more woke and know the value of some of these things, so it's even easier for them. And they have way more learning resources. For us, you'd have to get a modem, put data that was very slow to even do any online studying. And nowadays on your phone, you have access to immense resources. So it's the best time. Now is the best time to go into cybersecurity and be able to learn, because you can now go to generative AI and create content, ask any question. First, it was Google at the time, so you had to look through multiple articles before you get the actual content that you need to understand the topic. Now you go to generative AI, put in the question, and it will explain everything for you. You can even tell it, explain to me as a 5-year-old, and it will break down all the technicalities to a very, very digestible state. So I keep telling them that you are very lucky. Utilize the resources available to you. There are so, so many. For us, we didn't have those opportunities, but somehow we managed to make it. So yeah, that's the approach. That's usually the first thing that I tell them. And then I also tell them, the ones who are my personal mentees, I always tell them, I need to see the drive coming from you. You need me more than I need you. So if you don't have the initiative and the drive, then I feel like both of us would be wasting our time. You won't get value from me, and I won't be imparting any value from you. So I usually implore them to have the initiative and the drive, so that they're coming to me to give some fine tuning here and there.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for being such a wonderful mentor. I know even I never had a mentor, so, and this is
Yeah,
aging me,
both of
but
us can be your mentor.
in my days, I might ask Alison to be a mentor. In my days, in my days, I didn't have, we didn't have Google either. So, so yes, I think our people, today we are really fortunate that we have all those resources at hand, and very easily we can get resources. But thank you for being a mentor, Alison. Thank you.
And Trey.
So now, before we end, there is this aspect of slow transition, because I feel like even if you spend a lot of time in uni, and also when you got out of uni and then you spend some time, you know, volunteering, do you find that still those were very critical for building your career?
Yes, definitely, definitely. There's no job that I've worked at or volunteering opportunity that I've taken where I haven't learned. When I was volunteering with the Directorate of ICT Support, I learned one work ethic. My boss at the time was someone who pushed you to figure things out. He's the one who told me, Google is your friend. There's no question you're going to have that is not going to be on Google. Someone else has faced it before, so figure it out. So I learned that bit of, okay, whatever it is you throw my way, I'll be able to figure it out because I have the internet. Like Josephine said, I'm sure for their days now, they'd had to go to the library and look for books that might be outdated to figure something out. These days, AI is helping a lot in that regard, because even if it's coding, maybe I would be passionate about coding now if I could just paste it into generative AI and then it tells me where the error is. Instead of looking line by line, that's what frustrated me the most, looking line by line. It was so tedious. So every workplace I've been able to learn something. When I joined IT support, I was the only person there. So I had to figure out a lot of things, implement a lot of things. For me, that I felt I learned a lot in terms of how to do work by myself without guidance. Doing digital marketing helps me a lot even nowadays in terms of what I do when it comes to LinkedIn and whatnot, how I market myself and how I market the company that I work for. Being a customer care representative helped shape my people skills. So I believe in any workplace, for as long as you are a go-getter, you're able to utilize that opportunity to learn a thing or two, which then helps shape your career as you go along, from everywhere, from any person that you interact with. If, as long as you have that mindset of, I can learn something, let me see what I can learn. Let me see how I can do for myself. My mom, growing up, we used to have a madman on the village. I don't know whether he was mad or a drunkard, one of the two. And she used to tell us, even from that one, you can learn something. You can learn and be like, I don't want to do ABCD so that I end up like that one. So from everyone that you interact with, for as long as you go with that open mindset of there is something, for as long as you know that you're not the best and you have that at the back of your mind that everyone has something that they can learn from them, then you, with that mindset, there's no job that you'll do, be it being a salesperson or say you're a hawker or you're a cleaner, you will learn something that will then help build onto who you become and your career at the end of the day.
Thank you for that. Any parting shots for our audience?
I don't know. First of all, I'm shocked that we are ending, still enjoying the conversation. But yeah, I'm glad. Thank you very much, Josephine and Dale, for inviting me to be part of this podcast. Like I said, I'm a huge fan. Can't wait.
You're welcome.
I already sent this to my WhatsApp channels, family and whatnot, and I told them as soon as the recording is out, just know I'm decimating so that they can see me. Back in the day, it would be being on TV. Now it's being on YouTube, and it's quite exciting. So I really appreciate. I love what you do and how you're helping bring more professionals onto board so that they can share their stories And I believe it will be impactful. It's one step at a time, creating awareness, creating, letting people know how they can get into this space and how different people take different journeys, but the destination is the same. And so it kind of gives hope to people who are starting out and people who are already in the field and maybe are a bit lost, because then they can see that, okay, so-and-so faced this type of challenge, so-and-so faced this type of challenge, or this one approached it this way. So there's no template or guide to follow. It's everyone can make it in the cyber. Yeah, this is a very good platform and avenue within which you can reach out to very many more people. So thank you. Thank you very much for the job well done.
Well, and thank you, Ellison. Always an honor to have someone on our podcast, especially with your profile. And especially, you know, we've had a lot of different guests on, but I think you're the first in who's been an IT audit, which is such an important part of cybersecurity, if you like. So we are grateful that you took the time. I know you're busy, but we appreciate you know, us, you sharing our story. I know it does feel short, but it has been an hour, so we have to cut it at some stage.
I understand.
There's always, there can always be round two. We can always have part two, because the conversation we can always continue. Yeah, but thank you.
Pleasure is all mine.
Yeah, so with that, I have to first correct Josephine. Yeah, the second auditor we have had. We had Emily.
Who was the first one? Oh, Emily. I'm sorry. Yes, Emily. Yes. So I'm sorry. Yes, second. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was working on clouds.
I guess it's a first auditor in a auditing firm.
Yeah,
okay. But I can still work on clouds.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
I hope Emily doesn't kill me, but yes.
She's your best friend, you can imagine.
I know. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. So by the way, people should check out, first like, subscribe, and check out Emily's episode, since we are still in the line of auditing, so they can check it out. Other than that, yes. See you in the next one.